Hey, it's Scott, and guess what? You're about to hear an ad. And that's both good and bad. It's good because ads are what make it possible for me to keep bringing you these episodes. And it's bad because, well, maybe you don't like listening to ads, and I get that. And the good news is, you don't have to. When you sign up to support the show, you get every single episode without any ads. Plus, you get all the bonus episodes. Yeah, did you know there are actually bonus episodes? And you can try it all for free just to see what it's like. If you're on an iPhone, just go to the What Was That Like podcast and at the top, click on Try Free and you're in. On Android, just go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus and try it out completely free. Once you've had the ad-free experience, you'll see why hundreds of other listeners are already doing it. But for now, here's another ad and then on with today's episode.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
What Was That Like? Contains adult language and content and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to What Was That Like? I'm your host, Scott Johnson. This is a show where we talk to regular people, people just like you or just like me, who have found themselves in an extremely unusual situation. We'll hear their stories and get inside their head because we all want to know, what was that like? More information about each episode at whatwasthatlike.com. Here we go. Akemi and her husband Clay have been through a pretty bizarre experience. When I heard this story, I knew I needed to talk to this young lady. She and Clay were doing a volcano hike. Yeah, that in itself might seem story-worthy, but this was not actually an active volcano, so it wasn't spewing lava. They hiked the 2.5 miles up to the rim, hung out for a while, took some pictures. Then Clay decided he wanted to climb down into the crater. Akemi didn't feel safe because of the steep incline, so Clay ventured down on his own. Things did not go as planned. This happened on an island, and they were all alone, and Akemi had no phone signal to call for help. And they were on their honeymoon. Akemi and Clay are back home in Indiana now. What you're about to hear is an experience they would not have chosen to go through, but they do have quite a story to tell their grandchildren someday. And did you know we have a private Facebook group for listeners of this podcast? We'd love to see you there. And if you'd like to join the others who support this show for as little as $1 per month, you can do that at whatwasthatlike.com/support. And now, let's hear this story from Akemi. Are you guys pretty avid hikers?
I would not say that we are. I've done some hiking of the Appalachian Trail in the Pennsylvania area before, but that it's been probably 7 years since I did that. I do like to hike on vacations, but Clay not so much. We both enjoy hiking, but it's not something that we make it a point to do extremely frequently. If the opportunity presents itself when we're on a trip or on a vacation or anything like that, then we will. We enjoy it, but it's nothing that we have, you know, special gear that we use or anything like that.
All right. So you got married on July 13. That was your wedding day.
Yeah.
Was it that day that you flew to St. Kitts?
It was the following afternoon.
So the next day you flew to St. Kitts, an island down in the Caribbean. And so this was your honeymoon. You were planning to be there for a week. Did you have anything scheduled or just hiking, swimming, stuff like that?
We did have planned activities to do on some different days. Not every day did we have an activity planned for. And we were kind of flexible with our schedule. So we didn't schedule ahead of time with any tour guides or anything like that, because we still wanted to have that flexibility. If the weather wasn't very good to do a certain activity, we would just change days. So we had done some other activities at this point in time, like some water sports, just some time on the beach, checking out some different restaurants and like historical places on the island. And on Thursday was when we had decided to have the volcano hike day. And we had planned to go to the neighboring island of Nevis the following day on Friday and do some other things there before we headed out on Saturday.
So you had been there like 4 days.
Yes.
And so it was a Thursday, and the plan was to hike Mount Liamuiga, which is a dormant volcano. What happened that day?
We decided to hike the volcano, and we'd done a fair amount of research regarding the volcano hike. There are several different tour guides who offer tours that you can pay for, either like an agency or just people individually, like somebody who lives on the island and has hiked the volcano a lot and knows a lot about it, will offer individual tours. So our plan had been, once we drove to the volcano, which is about an hour away from our resort on the island, we planned to just go to the like visitor center of the volcano and see if we could talk to a tour guide there and talk them into a lower price, because most of the costs that we saw for these tours were about $100 a person. And we were kind of like, well, if we can get by without doing it, like it's just going to be a hike, you know, but they do have like interesting information and history and things like that that they'll share with you typically on these kinds of tours. So I always like having tour guides. But when we arrived at the bottom of the volcano, there was not really even like a parking lot. There were no buildings, no visitor center, nothing. And no other cars were parked down there. So it kind of just started, and it's covered with vegetation. It reminded me almost of the Jurassic Park movies with ferns and the gigantic trees with their roots coming out of the ground and lots of flowers and unique looking tropical plants. So it was beautiful, but it pretty much started right at the base of the volcano with all the vegetation, and there was just a little trail that started there. So we're like, okay, sure, we'll just go ahead and jump on the trail and start hiking.
It sounds like you were kind of expecting sort of a more touristy type place.
Yes, and that was what some of the sites seem to allude to. It's like it's a big tourist attraction, and it was. If you searched on just any search engine, you know, top attractions at St. Kitts, or, you know, best things to do as a visitor, that was one of like the top three things to do. So it was highly recommended, except for people who said it was just like too intense for them. They said, yeah, don't do this if you're not into hiking and like rugged terrain and getting a workout and getting a lot of exercise, because it's not for somebody who just likes to like walk trails, like leisurely type things.
Yeah. You guys are young and fit. And so you're thinking, we're up for it, right?
Yeah. I thought I enjoy hiking, and I like being out in nature a lot, and plays extremely like physically fit and loves sports. So we both thought, sure, let's go for it. We knew about how long it was. It's about a 3 mile, like 2.5-3 mile long trail from the very base of it up to the summit, and then back down. So it's pretty short, I guess, but it takes a while because of the elevation increases that you're experiencing. So it's not just kind of a 3 mile long hike that's only going to take you an hour or so. The hike up to the top took us about 2 hours and 45 minutes, but we saw that most people were taking about anywhere from 2.5 hours to 3 hours to summit the volcano, because you're increasing a lot in elevation. So there's a lot of like switchbacks to try and get you there. And oftentimes there's a lot of like rocks and boulders that you're kind of crawling up onto in order to continue on the path.
Yeah, I know I checked the elevation and it gets up to about 3,800 feet.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So that's 3,800 feet in, what did you say, 2 miles or 3 miles?
I think it's about 2.5 miles to get up to the top of walking. Now, granted, you're not obviously increasing that much in elevation, but just like how the path kind of takes you up the side of the, you know, yes, it was about that far. So
it's enough to get your heart rate elevated as you're hiking. And, that's good.
You know, we took some, scenery breaks, catch our breath a little bit, like on the way up too, and to drink some water and everything, because it's always pretty humid in the Caribbean. Most of the time though, when you're on an island, you don't notice it as much because you have the breeze. So that kind of keeps you pretty cool, but being inside kind of that very moist, very humid environment where you have the canopy of trees overhead, and it was even sprinkling lightly while we were making the hike up. And then once we got to the top, we're kind of in the clouds. So we got to the summit of the crater at about 11:45, and then we stopped to eat lunch at the top of the summit. We ate up there, we took some pictures, kind of walked around on some shorter trails up there that kind of led to either side of the summit. Once you get to the top, there was a gentleman that we ran into who was just about to make his way down. We chatted with him for a bit, and he's like, "Hey, do you find any other trails?" And we just said, "Well, really, all we've seen is the one that we came up on." And then the wind's just to the side here. So he, you know, wished us well for the rest of our hike and then headed back down. And he was by himself.
And he's the only person you saw during this trip?
Yeah, the only person that we saw the whole day. And I wasn't sure if it was because I even mentioned that to Clay as we were climbing. I'm like, I'm surprised that we're not running into anybody, because I kind of expected to see some other people on trail and maybe even some other tour guides. But I did still think it was odd that there were no cars parked at the bottom of the vehicles down there. So
are you sure you started at the right place?
Yes, this was, there were two separate, you could go on either trail on either side. Apparently there was a trail on the other side, but it wasn't one that we've seen on some of these like trail guide tourism sites. It's like the side that they would meet on and like the address, the location that they would go to. And this was called the Mount Leomega Trail. So it's kind of, I guess, like the standard one or the most popular one to hike.
You just picked a day when there was nobody else there.
Yeah, conveniently, which it was one of the few days that week that it was a little bit overcast. But that was one of the reasons why we're like, well, we'll go ahead and do it this day, because we won't want to be out on the beach or doing any other outdoor activities if it's a little cooler and more overcast today. So once we'd gotten to the summit, Clay kind of climbed around on some rocks to get some better pictures, because he was trying to get above the canopy of the trees so that you could see across the crater. And then once he'd come down from that, we kind of discovered another trail that led down into the crater of the volcano, which is not, and we could even look into it from the summit where we were. It's not, obviously, it doesn't have any lava or anything like that. There's kind of what looks like a little marshy area over on one side of it. And the rest of it just looks like a grassy plain with some ferns and other smaller vegetation in there, but no trees were growing on the inside of the crater. So it looked like someplace where you could go down into and take some really great pictures of the rest of the summit of the volcano. But Clay really wanted to go down into it. So we kind of went back a little bit more into the woods. We both started down the trail. And I say trail kind of lightly here, because it wasn't so much walking down. It was more so you would go down it almost like you're going down a ladder from like a second story of a floor or something. So we like turned around and we were facing like the inside, and we were kind of climbing down.
Yeah, I remember I saw that you had described that this is in some places was an 80-degree incline.
Yeah.
Is that right? Because, I mean, obviously 90 degrees is just straight up and down. 80 degrees is, I mean, it seems like you'd almost have to do kind of a butt slide, you know, to go down.
Yeah, and on some, I don't know that 80 degrees would be 100% accurate, but I think definitely 60 or 70 degrees.
That's still very steep.
Yes, and it was extremely steep. And as you were going down, and we saw this before we even started down. They had like paracord ropes that had been secured to like around trees and drilled into rocks. So obviously it was intended to be a trail that some people would go down. But as I was going down, I already have a fear of heights.
This episode is sponsored by Cook Unity. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code what before checkout for 50% off your first week. When Jenny and I go out to eat at some local restaurant, one of the things I love to try is a curry dish. I just love it when a chef can get that perfect balance of spices. It's one of my favorite meals. But even better is to have an amazing curry meal without having to go out, like the one I had recently. It was cauliflower and chickpea coconut curry with steamed jasmine rice. And even though it was created by a professional local chef here in Florida, we enjoyed that meal right here at home, thanks to Cook Unity. And you know what else I love? All the prep and cooking is done for me ahead of time. So all I do is just choose the one I want, and 2 minutes later, I'm enjoying a tasty hot meal. It feels like I'm one of those wealthy podcasters with a chef on staff right here at home. Cook Unity meals arrive fresh. They've never been frozen. All of their packaging is earth-friendly, and it's cheaper than other delivery options. Oh, and you have to try that coconut curry.
Experience chef-quality meals every week delivered right to your door. Go to cookunity.com/what or enter code WHAT before checkout for 50% off your first week. That's 50% off your first week by using code WHAT or going to cookunity.com/what.
So I wasn't like super thrilled to be climbing down this, and it was still a little bit slick because it had been raining earlier and there were lots and lots of rocks on this because there wasn't as much vegetation growing down this steep slant.
So it was kind of slippery.
Yes, exactly. So we like came to like a few rocks where like I could kind of step off to the side of the trail and like stand on them, and it was more level. And I just like looked down and I said, you know what? I don't want to go down much farther. I said, do you really want to keep going? He said, I really just want to go to the bottom and get some pictures. And he told me that he'd be really quick and be right back up. But knowing from when we'd been at the part of the summit where we could see down into the crater and knowing how far down of a climb it was going to be, I was just like groaning inwardly because I knew I was going to be standing there waiting for him like 30 minutes or maybe 40 minutes, depending on how long he wanted to stay down there and take some pictures once he got to the bottom and got back up. So I was just like, oh my goodness. But I really, really did not want to keep going because I felt like I was going to slip. It was probably about 2 minutes later when he'd gone out of view already and I had heard him continue to descend and climb down farther. And then I kind of lost hearing and he became out of sight. So I didn't really know what was going on anymore, but then I heard what sounded like a big branch like snapping and then something like rolling down the hill. Like, I don't know. I thought like a rock rolled and fell, but it was still like quiet. So I didn't hear like Clay like shout or nothing that really like alarmed me at that point in time. But then like, as a couple more minutes went by, I kind of just almost had this feeling of paranoia that I can't really explain, but it was partially probably caused by me also just thinking, my goodness, I'm going to be standing here for a lot longer. And I don't want to like, I don't know. I don't really have anything else I want to climb around on. I already kind of, we took our pictures already while we ate lunch and everything. So
what do you think the noise that you heard, what do you think it was?
I don't know if that was, Clay thinks that it was the rope that he was holding onto at that point in time while he was climbing down, snapping, and then he fell.
So the rope itself broke, or maybe the tree that it was tied to snapped off. Or
yeah, and we don't know. We still don't know. We still haven't found out what caused the fall, and Clay still cannot remember. So the reason we think he probably can't remember is because he probably hit his head right as he fell, and then he lost consciousness, obviously, at that point in time. But so I was up there still, and I couldn't hear anything, but I was just annoyed and I wanted him to come back because I didn't want to have to wait that long. So I started yelling his name really loudly and I said, hey, Clay, like, where are you? And I figured he was maybe out of earshot, but then I was calling straight down the side of the mountain. So I thought he could hopefully hear me. And then I heard back like a really, really faint help. And then I called again after that because I wasn't sure if that was what I heard or not. And then I heard it again. And then at that point in time, I turned around and I faced the mountain and I just started climbing down as quickly as I could. And I just started screaming his name because I was pretty certain by that point in time that he'd actually called out. And it was an extremely like desperate sounding, like weak sounding, like gasping for air help that I heard from him.
Could you tell it was his voice?
Yes. Yeah, I could tell that it was his voice too.
Obviously, who else would be down there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I climbed for probably, I don't know, it was probably like 5 minutes that I climbed down, and I was climbing very rapidly and until I found him. But on my climb down, probably after about 2 minutes of climbing or 3 minutes of climbing, I found his cell phone on the side of the path and the orange bandana that he had tied around his head that morning, just kind of cast to the side of the trail. And I grabbed both of those really quickly and I just kept climbing down. And I was just screaming his name at that point in time because I had no idea what had happened. I knew he had fallen, obviously, because I saw some of his belongings up there. And then as I started to get closer to him, I was just panicking and extremely concerned about what I was going to find. So because I was kind of freaking out, I screamed down to him as I kind of came within eyesight of him. And I said, are you okay? Like, what's wrong? And he kept saying, I don't know. I don't know. I said, you need to tell me what's wrong with you. So I can prepare for what I'm going to see. Cause I didn't know, I mean, how severe his injuries were or what was going on.
So you kind of knew where he was at that point, but you couldn't really see him clearly.
Yes. I was still climbing down and there were still some trees in the way, but I could see he was wearing a white t-shirt and his back was facing me. And
okay.
He, as I kept closer to him, that his head was bleeding, the back of his head was bleeding, and that he was kind of like leaning forward, had his legs kind of like pulled up as though he was just like sitting and leaning forward towards his knees with his head in his hands. And I said, do you have any bones, like broken bones, or like what is going on? And he just kept saying, I don't know, and kind of like gasping in like a gasping voice. And I got closer to him and I said, you're going to be okay. I said, and I just looked at his face and he was bleeding profusely out of his nose and he'd been vomiting. So right then I knew, okay, he has a concussion. I know that these are symptoms. This is a sign that he has a head injury because he's vomiting, bleeding from his face. And obviously I can see spots where he's hit his head, right behind his ear. And then on top of his head, he was bleeding from both of those areas. But aside from that, the rest of his body was pretty much uninjured, which was shocking to me. I mean, he had some minor, like little scrapes and cuts, but all of his bones were fine. And
in your previous experience, do you have any medical training at all?
I just have, my sister's a nurse, but I personally don't have any medical training aside from being certified in first aid and CPR, I think when I was in eighth grade. And I'm pretty sure like CPR only lasts for like a year or 2 years or something, and first aid lasts for three. So,
because not many people know about that vomiting is a sign of a concussion. So I was wondering how you.
I've had lots of friends who played sports and they've had concussions in the past, and they said that you know, like an extreme headache, dizziness, blurred vision after you know you fall and hit your head, and then vomiting are signs of that. So that's how I knew that was what was going on. And I was just, at this point in time, what's going through my head is it took us almost 3 hours to get to the top of the volcano. We fall now into at least halfway down, probably the crater. And we're going to have to get out of that. There's nobody here to help me. I got out my phone at that point in time and my hands are shaking and I'm trying to dial 911 and it just tells me no network. Like there's absolutely no network on either of our phones that I'm trying to call from. And I mean, I knew at that point in time that we were going to have to get out ourselves. I mean, at least he didn't have any broken bones. So he wasn't like in extreme pain when I helped him stand up for the most part, but he was just extremely disoriented and extremely dizzy and resistant to even moving. And he still didn't understand what was going on. But I'd ask him his name and I'd ask him my name and he knew who we both were. But he just kept gasping and holding his head in his hands and asking where we were and asking me to get help. And I said, I'm trying. I said, but there's nobody here. And he's like, well, what about that guy we saw earlier? And I said, well, I've been screaming and he's not responding. So we're going to have to get out of here ourselves. And he says, why can't you call 911? Like he just did not understand what was going on. And he kept asking where we were. And I kept telling him, we're on our honeymoon, we're in St. Kitts, and we've been climbing a volcano and you fell. And then 2 minutes later, he'd ask me where we were again. But I just told him, you're just going to have to listen to everything that I have to say. And we're going to have to climb out of here. And then we're going to have to climb down the side of the volcano until we can get signal.
During this time, you were obviously on the inside, you were panicking, like, how are we going to get out? And what's, you know, how bad is his head injury? But you were able to stay calm outwardly?
Yeah, for the most part. I just started praying like out loud so that like both of us could hear, and just like praying for like strength for both of us to get out, and just for peace for both of us, and for both of us to have clear heads and to be able to physically just be able to climb out of the crater and then down the side for the next 3 hours, because I knew it was going to take about that long. And it did. It took us about 3 hours until almost 4 p.m. to get down to the bottom.
So how did you, obviously before you could get, you had to get back up to the room. How did you do that?
Clay was still able to pretty much crawl. And while he crawled and grabbed onto the ropes or onto the rocks, I was climbing up behind him and I pushed on like his butt and I pushed on like his legs and like got beneath his feet and like put his feet up for him. He had the ability to move. He was just obviously had almost zero balance because his vision was blurred and he was conscious, but still had no idea what was going on, incredibly disoriented. So I pretty much just told him what to do. I said, grab this, move your hand here, climb here, climb here. And I just said, great job. Keep going. You're doing great. And it probably took us 30 minutes maybe to climb back to the top of the summit. And then after that, I was like, all right, now it's going to be easier now because we're just going to climb down. But even if he was just standing there, he would almost fall over. So I had to, parts of it when it wasn't an incredibly steep part as we were making our descent, I would just have his arm over my shoulders and he would lean on me and just kind of stumble along.
How do your body sizes compare?
Clay is 5'10 and 160 pounds, and I'm 5'2 and I'm 110 pounds. So we're both smaller, I guess, for like our ages.
Being able to guide him, though, I mean, that was a real workout for you, though.
Yeah. Honestly, probably a lot of it was just adrenaline and kind of being in shock and being able to make it down, because by the end of that day and the next day and the next day after that, I was so incredibly sore. It like hurt to move. It was hard to sit down and to stand up, which granted, I might have been a little sore after doing the hike anyway, but it was nothing compared to what the hike turned out to be at the end.
You weren't expecting this kind of workout.
No, yeah. Definitely not.
Was he showing any other signs of injuries as you continued to make progress?
As we continued down the side of the volcano and as we were climbing up, we did have to stop almost probably every 10 or 12 minutes is what my estimate was. But again, this seemed like it was taking forever because we were going so slowly. It seemed like every 10 or 12 minutes that he just was vomiting again and again and again, and or at least trying to, his body was trying to, just as a reaction from his severe head trauma, basically only blood at that point in time that he was vomiting. Which made me panic because then I was wondering if he just had internal injuries to his organs that I would have no idea how to diagnose. And then I kept thinking, well, am I making him, you know, am I hurting him even more by making him climb down the side of the volcano, you know, for the next 3 hours? Like, is this damaging his body even worse? Like, am I causing irreversible damage? Like, I just had all these questions going through my head. And then I just kept weighing my options. What's the better decision to make? Should I leave him and try and go down myself? Or do I make sure that we just keep going together as far as we possibly can? Like, I thought, no, I'm not going to leave him because I don't know what if he'd be there when I got back. And that would incredibly drastically increase the amount of time before he would get help, because it would take me still probably 2 hours to get to the bottom. And then once I did, I'd have to get somebody to come back up, and then it takes us another 2 hours, and then we have to make sure, I mean, he's disoriented, he might try and climbs a random direction. Like, so I decided that I was just going to keep going with him. And as far as, and as long as we could go, we were going to go. And then, if he couldn't go any longer, then I was going to have to go for help. But as long as he could keep going, and he could the rest of the way, which was amazing to me, just the strength that he had, that we were going to keep going.
Here's my hot take for today. If you see something advertised as a free trial, it might cost you more than you expect. At least that's my experience. I give up my credit card to try something for free for a week, then I forget about it, and now I'm paying for it every month without even noticing it. But when I signed up for Rocket Money, that ridiculous waste came to a screeching halt. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It lets you see all of your subscriptions listed right there in one place. When you see a subscription you're paying for but you don't want, do you really want to spend an hour on the phone trying to track down some customer service agent to cancel it? Rocket Money can help you get rid of it with just a few taps. They also give me this great dashboard so I can see what I've spent this month compared to last month. And they'll even try to negotiate lower bills for me by up to 20%. So I'm spending less and saving more. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features.
Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/whatwas. That's rocketmoney.com/whatwas. rocketmoney.com/whatwas.
I'll confess, sometimes I let my podcast playlist get out of hand and I get way behind. But there's one show that I subscribe to and any new episode goes right to the top of the queue. That's the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's because I never have to figure out, okay, is this one going to be interesting or do I wait for the next one like I do for some shows? Because Jordan's conversations are always a must listen for me. He talks to fascinating people from any category you can think of. Authors, scientists, athletes, you name it. He's talked to undercover cops who posed as mafia and the actual career mafia hitmen. And the stories he gets out of these people, just incredible. In one episode, he talked to Paul Holes. You might know that name if you're into true crime. He's the former investigator who uses really advanced methods to solve cold cases, including the Golden State Killer. And another one I really enjoyed was with Sam Harris, an author and neuroscientist who promotes skepticism, and he doesn't mind taking on some seriously controversial topics like politics or religion. That one's going to make you think. Whenever a new episode of the Jordan Harbinger Show pops up, I already know it's going to be an episode that I'll enjoy listening to, and I'll bet you will too. For some episode recommendations, check out jordanharbinger.com/start. Or search for the Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R, on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
About at the 1 mile marker, because there are like markers and like, it seemed like white paint on like a rock that marked 1 mile and 2 miles, and then I don't think there was one for three because it's not actually 3 miles to the top, but I saw it about a 1 mile marker. And at that point in time, I tried 911 probably, I don't know, two or three times. And right after the 1 mile marker saying that, okay, we'd gone about halfway. But it was discouraging too, because we had still another mile to go. I tried calling 911. They did answer. Finally, I had network on my phone and I told them our location. They said they were sending an ambulance. And at that point in time, it was so relieving just to have made contact with another person, just to have had that assurance that somebody was coming to help who knew how to help. And I told Clay that, and we just continued to make our descent. Now, granted, this whole time I had not stopped from screaming for help, you know, constantly, just as we descended down the mountain. So I was losing my voice too, just from screaming like that. And eventually then we got to almost the bottom. I could tell because it was getting much less steep, but I didn't still know how much farther. And I was still screaming for help at that point in time. And I actually heard somebody call back, and that was the two paramedics. And then one of the security officers at the nearest resort had been sent over as well. And that was just seeing them come into sight. And then they grabbed Clay and I grabbed the stretcher they'd brought because they kind of just carried him out, the two of them. And then I walked back with one of the other paramedics who had all the medical bags. And it was just, I was so exhausted, but I felt so relieved at that point in time that we had finally made it to the bottom. And that at least at this point in time, like, I'd finally gotten him back and he had the ability to get medical treatment and medical care now that he needed. And I mean, it was still incredibly scary because we're in another country and it's not the United States. And you always hear about in other countries, if you have anybody or any friends who traveled there and they had some kind of an emergency experience. And, you know, it sounds scary sometimes because it's not familiar with, but he received the care that he needed. We were in the hospital from that Thursday night until Wednesday, when Clay was airlifted by an air ambulance airplane back to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where they did follow-ups with him and found out that not only did he just have the fracture to his skull where air had been able to get inside and a severe concussion, that he also had a spinal fluid leak that was coming through his nose, which they weren't able to diagnose in St. Kitts at the hospital with the technology that they had. So that was scary to know that he could have gotten meningitis or he could have gotten a severe infection had that not been diagnosed and treated.
What kind of treatment did they actually give him in St. Kitts? Was it just, he would just stay there to get stabilized for the trip back to the U.S.? What did they do?
He was given an IV bag in the emergency room and they did two CAT scans of his head and then of his neck. And they thought what they were seeing was his second vertebrae that had been fractured, which they were shocked then that he was able to move and he wasn't paralyzed because typically that the C2 vertebrae is incredibly important. Like if you fracture that one, you're usually paralyzed or you're dead. But it ended up being that their first CAT scan was not very accurate. So they did a second one and they thought it was just some air bubbles that had traveled down into his spine area from the fracture. So they diagnosed him with the fractures and the severe trauma. So they kept him on bed rest for the most part. They gave him an antibiotic, I think just because that's kind of standard in the hospital, but he didn't really have pain, just the dizziness and the instability. Basically, he was very unstable when he'd stand up, but he had regained his orientation, so he knew where he was, and he didn't have memory loss aside from the fact that he didn't remember how the accident had happened.
How long did it take him to be oriented again, to know where he was and what was going on?
When we were in the emergency room, I was talking to him, he at least knew what was going on, but he still seemed incredibly exhausted and disoriented. And it didn't seem like he was his normal self and really understanding what was going on until the next day on Friday morning when I came in.
He was probably dehydrated to some degree.
Oh, absolutely. Because we drank most of our water just coming up the side of the volcano. And I had probably a 16-ounce water bottle left as we came back down to the base of the volcano. But I wasn't going to give him water because obviously he's having a lot of trauma. And I didn't really drink any because I was not even thinking about it. But I guarantee that definitely was a contributing factor to his disorientation and, how he felt, I'm sure.
So you guys were happy to be back in the U.S.
Yes, that was such a relieving feeling to be on that airplane heading back, arriving in Fort Lauderdale, being in the hospital in America and just being with people who speak better English that's easier to understand. And in St. Kitts, they speak English, but it's with almost a British Islander accent. So it's kind of, it's not super hard to understand them, but they would say something and it didn't make very much sense. And you try and understand what they were saying, or they try and understand what you were saying, and then they wouldn't understand it. So just being back and knowing that we're closer to our family and knowing that we're in the United States was an incredibly reassuring feeling. And, having insurance cover things at that point in time. And
so, you were back in Florida, but you actually live in Indiana,
yes,
right?
Yeah. So we were in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the hospital from Wednesday, the 25th, I believe it was, of July, until the following Friday, August 3rd. I believe that was a Friday, August 3rd. We were there for over a week still following him being in the hospital in St. Kitts for 7 days. So yeah, it was a very long time to be in a hospital. I'm sure for Clay too. He was in a hospital 15 days straight. So yeah, a very long honeymoon for us too, but not the most enjoyable one, but definitely an extremely memorable one.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody wants an extended honeymoon. Right. Just not this kind though.
Yeah. Not this type.
How has his recovery been since then? Any injuries that are still hanging on?
The one injury that Clay has, and it is permanent, is he is completely deaf in his right ear. And that was caused by the fracture of his skull going through his hearing organ or his cochlea in his inner ear. And that could potentially be part of where the spinal fluid leak occurred as well, because your ear, nose, and throat are all connected. And his right ear had been filled with fluid. And initially, the doctors in St. Kitts thought that that was what was causing his hearing loss, and that he would just have to wait until the fluid drained back or was absorbed by his body so that his hearing would come back. But we did not do any official hearing testing in Fort Lauderdale because they were very focused on keeping him basically just lying in bed all day. And he had to have a spinal drain put in to drain spinal fluid from his lower back so that it would relieve the pressure in his skull so that that spinal fluid leak in his sinuses could heal. They weren't really focused on trying to figure out what was going on with his hearing because they wanted for that fluid to also be absorbed. So we did not officially diagnose that or get that diagnosed until probably another 2 weeks after we had gotten back from Fort Lauderdale, when he went to an audiologist, an ENT or nose and throat doctor in Indianapolis, which is where we're from. And then they did the hearing test. They found out that he is profoundly deaf in his right ear. And Clay was disappointed because he's always the optimist and is always thinking, oh, I'm going to get out soon. They're saying maybe 3 days, maybe five. It'll definitely be three. And, you know, it never was the case, but he never lost hope. And he's like, great. I was hoping it wasn't that and hoping that it was correctable. Now, since that point in time, his audiologist that he met with said that it is in fact permanent, but it could potentially be something that could be resolved by a cochlear implant if the fracture to his skull went through the cochlea and not the cochlear nerve. Now, if it went through the cochlear nerve, then it is not repairable, but he could potentially qualify for that cochlear implant, but they'd have to conduct an MRI. And we want to know initially first if his insurance will cover it. So currently we're in the process of getting with some ENT surgeons here in the Indianapolis area and seeing if that could potentially be an option for Clay. And then they would conduct the MRI and find out if it even is repairable. But if not, he's still incredibly optimistic about his whole life situation now, even though he can't hear out of his right ear. And if that isn't an option, then there's different hearing aid type options that can kind of receive sound in his right ear and then Bluetooth it over to his left ear so that at least he doesn't seem deaf to people when they're talking to him. He can have to turn his head, you know, all the way around to try and hear them.
And in the meantime, you've gotten used to just walking with him on his left side,
yeah,
right?
Sitting on his left side, all of that. So if he tries to ignore me, he can always just roll over on his left side or turn away and have his right ear facing me. Yeah, ultimately, it's crazy to me that with all his injuries that happen, that's the only thing that he has lasting. And I'm glad it's that and not something that is physically painful to him, like, you know, migraines or something of that nature. It doesn't really affect his day-to-day too much.
Yeah, if he would have injured his back or broken, messed up his knee or something like that, I mean, that's stuff like that is with you the rest of your life usually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How often do you think about how things could have gone differently at any point in this story?
I definitely thought about it multiple times a day while we were in the hospital in St. Kitts. And, you know, Clay and I talked about what could have happened too. And we joked about, you know, this would be a great premise for like a movie to be based upon it. And in order to make it more dramatic, somebody would have to, you know, there'd have to be like animals involved attacking us too. Or, you know, we kind of joked around about it once we knew that he was going to be okay. But I do think about it. And every so often now I just think about the accident. Probably every day I still think about the accident. And whenever you go through something like that, it does kind of change your life and change the way you think about life a little bit, going through something that did have some permanent lasting effects on, you know, your new spouse, and that kind of mentally impacted you going through that as well. It's hard to completely put that in the past. I don't think I ever really could, or that Clay ever really could, because it did alter our lives a little bit. His life physically and my life, just living through that experience and now having that, it does change you. It makes you more grateful for what you've been given, and grateful that we were able to get out of it and that it had the outcome that it did, but also just very appreciative of the life that we're given. And Clay and I are both believers in God, and we believe that he is the one who ultimately brought us through this, and he had this in his plan for us and for our marriage and for our life together going forward. And we're grateful that he allowed for the outcome to happen that did. It's pretty incredible. And now we have a story that we can share with our friends and family and those people that we meet through the rest of our lives, and eventually with our kids, if we have them someday. And still something that I don't always love to think about or love to talk about, because it is emotional at points, but still, again, something that has kind of changed our lives. And it's important that we share the story with other people. So
definitely talk about testing those wedding vows pretty quickly, right?
Yes.
Usually you don't think of the sickness and in health thing until your later years, boy.
Exactly.
A week later, man.
Yeah, it happened real quick.
You think you'll ever go volcano hiking again?
Maybe not. Or if we ever did, we would make sure it was as a group or with a guide who actually knows what's going on and knows the volcano or mountain, and would probably say, actually, that's not a very safe trail to go down. And we'll be able to advise us on that if we were. Clay is unfazed by the accident. He still enjoys climbing and playing sports and, you know, being very active, which I'm glad that it hasn't altered him or scared him away from that. But I think we'll be a lot smarter in the decisions that we make and any kind of risk that may be involved going forward, just having had this experience.
And don't go off by himself.
Exactly.
Right? That's the rule.
Exactly. Yes. He's no longer allowed that.
Well, that's a great, I'm glad it turned out the way it did. And hopefully someday the technology will allow him to have a stereo hearing again. That's always a nice thing.
Yes.
Thanks for listening. Pretty crazy story, huh? I'll tell you, if I ever fall into a volcano, I hope someone like Akemi is nearby. I want to mention something here, and I'm putting this at the end of the podcast, because if you've listened all the way to the end, then I have to assume you really like the show, and I appreciate that. You probably heard on some other podcast where the host is always asking the audience, don't forget to leave us a rating and a 5-star review, because that's what helps us get found by more people. Unfortunately, that's just completely untrue. Ratings and reviews do nothing to help a show get discovered, and it's too bad a lot of podcast hosts don't know that. So that's why on this show, you don't hear me asking you to do that. It's just really a waste of time for your time and my time. I don't mind if you do, and if you want to, that's fine. But if you really want to help this podcast get found by more people, what I would love for you to do is to tell your friends about it. Like if you're in a Facebook group that's about podcasts, like where people recommend podcasts to each other, just create a post that says, hey, have you guys heard about this podcast called What Was That Like? And put a link to the website, whatwasthatlike.com. Or maybe talk about a particular episode you really liked.
And not just on Facebook, but if you're on Reddit, that's another great place for sharing podcasts. And speaking of sharing your favorite shows, I've started a Facebook group called I Found a Podcast. And the whole purpose of that group is for people to share their favorite podcasts or share a new one you've just discovered. So if you want to learn about some new podcasts you may not have heard of, or you want to share some of your favorites, check it out. You can get there by going to whatwasthatlike.com/found, F-O-U-N-D. So if you've shared this podcast with your Facebook friends or even your real life friends, thank you. And I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Hey, this is Scott. Did you know we offer a premium feed of this show that is completely ad-free and there are bonus episodes? Go to whatwasthatlike.com/plus or just click the link in the show notes of any episode to learn more and to sign up. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you can sign up right there in the app by clicking try free at the top of the episode list. And I hope to see you in the premium feed soon.